Up next with Michaela, part two.
In your mind, what do you believe about the way people speak, how they speak, and what that might mean in sort of the grand scheme of things?
Of the humans.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like, okay, I'm going to quote one of my favorite philosophers when I was an undergrad student in philosophy, which is Ludwig Wittgenstein. He was from Austria.
Yes.
So when I was an undergrad student in philosophy, I really loved, how would that be in English? Philosophy of language. And so I guess that it really helped me, you know, think about, you know, open my mind and think in the way I think today. So for him, you know, like, we live linguistically in a sense that, you know, there is no us outside our language world. So of course he was not meaning only the spoken language, you know, he was meaning any sort of language. It can be, again, what we said before, sign languages, it can be any sort of coding signals, you know, we understand, you know, how things work in, let's say, in a linguistic way, you know. And so he, in that sense, he was talking about linguistic games. So like every situation that we are in can be considered a linguistic game. As if it were a game in the sense that there are some rules, you know, you have to play rules, you know, to behave in certain context, whether you're at work, you're at home, in the family, you know. And so all of these rules are linguistically formed, again, in the sense of, you know, very big sense of language. And so even if when we dream, our dreams are linguistically formed, that's a language, the language of dreams. It might be working in images, but it is still a language, you know. So the human existence, we cannot know animals' existence at that level, but we know that human existence is always through language. Even if when you say, well, but I can't really express that feeling. Yeah, but the way you're saying that you can't express the feeling, so the way you're framing the feeling as not expressible, you know, that's, you're still using a linguistic game. So that's my philosophy in the sense that we live linguistically. And so again, it's not just a matter of communication, it's a matter of understanding how the world works, really. Like worldviews, you know, are communicated through linguistic language uses. Of course, this is a Western way of talking, you know, so we may have to consider, you know, how non-Western cultures think in terms of language. If they actually have the same concept of language, if they think in concepts, for instance, I don't know. So, you know, this argument is always very risky because it's always, you know, you might give for granted that what works for you, what you understand, you know, works for the whole planet, which this is not the case, right. You know. So, but of course, I can't speak from my, you know, little position in the world. So this is how I tend to see the things. Any kind of forms of coding or signing, well, animals do have actually system of signs, you know, of coding or communicating. But so again, it's not just communication. So it's not that we use language for something as a means to end, you know, it's just the same thing as living, I believe. And so in that way, you know, as soon as you enter a situation, you start speaking, you know, with these two words, you're actually communicating everything. From really, from your gender, your class, your race, your ethnicity, where you come from, your level of education, everything. Those two words that you can say, you know, hi, my name is, the way in which you say that, the way in which you accompany that with gestures or, you know, face expressions, anything. That's actually communicating your whole worldview, who you are, way more than just communicating your name and your identity. So this is my starting point, you know, as a philosophy of life, really. But I think for me, like, being aware of this is very important when it comes to teaching a language. So at the end, teaching a language in class, in language classes, it seems, you know, it seems an easy thing, but actually conveys so much of all of this. And that's a matter of bridging experiences among students with you, with the culture you're actually conveying with the language and the culture of the people they're learning. So it's really a process of negotiation, you know, learning a language. Yep. Definitely.
Wow. Yeah. I like that. I'm taking notes. I was like, this is cool. And I feel like I agree a lot with your philosophy and that perspective about how it communicates everything, because this idea of negotiations, that's sort of like the perpetual dance that you're in. And every time you interact with someone, you're really in a negotiation.
Yeah.
And I think developing tools to negotiate and understanding the way others receive this information, because it's one thing to communicate all these things, but you're also counting on the other person, the other people, to receive what you're trying to give out intentionally, accurately, and all that things, because these conflicts happen when there's like misalignment.
Yeah.
So sort of negotiating, how do we step together to complete this goal, this transaction of some sort?
Yeah. And I guess it helps really understanding, you know, phenomena like microaggressions, for instance, verbal aggressions. So when you understand that those episodes happen because there is that sort of negotiation in place, you know, and this is what we were talking before, like fears and, you know, a need of accommodating, then you put everything in perspective and you understand, again, it doesn't mean understanding doesn't mean legitimating, but it means, you know, understanding why happened, what happened, you know, in that moment. Since I think this is something that you work also on this, you know, when we are what we speak, in the sense of, you know, episodes of linguistic discrimination, language discrimination. So I feel like it's really important to go through this phenomena, understanding, you know, why they happened. And then precisely because it's the system of negotiation. For instance, I had, well, of course, you know, I'm not a native English speaker, so, you know, I make mistakes, I have an accent, I forget things, you know. I do that with my native language also, so I'm not pretending my Italian is perfect at all. So the more time I spend abroad, the more, you know, I speak very horrible. But in my own language. So I guess it's a melting pot in my brain. But I still think that I can communicate in English. And then that, I mean, you might judge my accent. I don't know. I don't know if I have a thick accent or people at home can judge my accent, but I don't know. So I think, like, this was not my main problems, like, lately. But so once I went to somebody's house and there were new people. And so I introduced myself. And again, I just said my name. Hi, nice to meet you. My name is, you know, and in my brain, again, I just said something, it was not a bunch of difficult words, because I have some difficult words in English that I can't pronounce. So I avoid them, you know, because I thought. And so the person was like, before even saying nice to meet you too, whatever, he said, whoa, you have a strong accent. I was like, okay, where are you from? Where have you been your past 30 years of life? I don't know. And so I felt I was like, wow, that's so rude. Like, you would never say that. I mean, I would never say that to a person. Like, you just met somebody, you're like, oh, wow, you have a strong accent. Okay. You have a not a strong brain. I don't know. Sorry, mister. Well, anyways, so, like, you know, the person that was with me was kind of angry. I was like, oh my God, that was very rude. I was like, yeah, but, you know, I don't care. I know that I'm foreign, so it's not that it's touching my, you know. But then I was like, well, the person felt like, you know, reacting that way, probably because he probably had a second where he didn't understand me.
Mm.
It might be that I started talking and he had to like pause half of a second and understand what I was saying, because maybe he didn't expect that, you know, and so maybe that was his reaction. So instead of saying, hey, I didn't understand, so you have a strong accent, so it's you that put me in a hard position, like I was struggling, mm-hmm. you know, something like that. So this is how I interpret it. I mean, I really gave 3 seconds of thought to the episode, but it was really interesting for me. And I was like, you know, in this little episode that lasted really few seconds, how much of the world of this person and my world just got into that situation? Like, the person was not exposed to many people, foreign people. You know, he had certain expectation. I came with different expectation. Maybe they had to do with my experience, you know. I say this also, I have another episode, sorry, because like the first, I lived a long time in Texas, and I don't know if that was because of the sun of Texas, but I became very blonde, really very blonde. And also, you know, I was using, well, always, all my life, but I was wearing boots and thing and shorts and, you know, and so every time they came back home, you know, the first few days in the first stores that I would go, people would think that I was American. Because I had a, now I don't think so anymore. But that time, I don't know, maybe I had something. Like, I don't know. I was coming with a particular light and something. And then people would start speaking in English to me. And so that was the expectation of the person that was talking to me. If I started talking in Italian, they will just jump. But having kind of a shock, not only Italian, but as I said, an Italian with a Roman accent. Mm-hmm. And so, well, not just, I honestly like this jumping moments, you know, so I like to create this shock.
Ah,
but I also, but I also hate when people in the stores, they get close to you, especially in Italy, they do a lot. Like, oh, what do you need? Do you need anything? Do you want to try anything? No, I'm just looking around. And so I will, so since they will start speaking in English, I will like, perfect, I'm going to reply back to English. So they feel like I don't want to engage in an English conversation with this customer. So they will leave me in peace.
But interesting, so, like, works out sometimes.
Yeah, but again, you know, these are like very silly episodes of daily life. But again, do you realize how much world happens in this?
Yeah,
like stereotypes, what they were thinking an American could look like, the fact that I you know, I don't know, I absorbed some, maybe I was not using too much my hands and gestures. I don't know. But yeah, but it's definitely, so I feel like this little episode's kind of prove my theory that we are what we speak.
Wow. Okay,
now you have to clap.
Now I have to clap. Let me see if I got the right one.
Yeah.
Wow. Amazing point.
I know.
So I do want to hear about,
yeah,
you can say no too.
Okay.
The hospital story.
What's the hospital
when
story?
You got sick.
Oh.
And this was another instance where they thought you spoke, well, they thought you were American, I guess.
Yeah.
And you were like, what?
When was that? Wait, help me.
So, I think
why do you know this? Like, I removed this from my memory.
I think so. You were sick.
Yeah, in Italy or here?
You in here.
Oh.
You were sick. You went to hospital, or I don't think it was a doctor. I think you went in, maybe it was urgent care.
Okay.
And they were just telling you things in English.
And you didn't understand, of course.
You weren't in a place to like receive, even though you definitely understand. But you were not in a place. And so I think Phoebe got you, and Phoebe was like, tell me, and then you're like, I don't know, and so you had to turn. I'm telling this story, but I'm wanting to know like what that was like for you, if you even remember that. And while it's a little funny now, it really does, I think, serve as an example for this misalignment
yeah.
that happens in really, really critical settings, such as a hospital, when you think about someone receiving instructions about aftercare, if there's a language barrier, there's
yeah.
too many examples, and I have several. There's too many where the person isn't being communicated with effectively, and they get hurt in response.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. how, like, tell me a little bit about the story. Recap.
Well, I have to say that the doctor situation, well, not anymore, but it's the one that causes me most language anxiety. Not anxiety in terms of being cured and going to the doctor, but because I have limited, of course, vocabulary connected to doctor practice and doctor environment, like literally, but not only specific words, like really how a doctor, and then probably I'm lucky because I haven't been to the doctor so often, but really how the doctor interacts with you. So many times, well, especially in the very beginning, the very few first years in the US, I was really not understanding what the people would say. And then I was like, I don't know, something silly. Are you here for a follow-up? What is a follow-up? A follow-up. I don't know. What is a follow-up? I mean, again, it seems silly, but I was missing totally a practice of, you know, how a doctor interacts with a patient mm-hmm. or how a nurse interacts with a patient. So this happened actually still today very often. Like I was to the eye doctor like a few months ago. And then the nurse, you know, at the beginning, they also, this is not something in my experience in Italy, you know, when you have a nurse, it first takes all the measurement and things, you know. So even the real practice is completely different. That's her. And she was speaking so fast because, of course, she was repeating things, you know, over and over and over. I could not understand. I was like, hey, slow down. Sorry, but this is my first time to an eye doctor in the U.S., I promise. I don't. And so, you know, and then poor lady, she had to do her job and go on, you know. But then I feel like my level of English is fairly high, you know. But I was like, how is that possible? I still have these issues. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, I guess it's possible. But in that case that you're mentioning, I remember very little, but probably because at the end I was stoned because I think I had stomach bug, something, but very strong to the point I was losing senses, really. So I can, sorry for the people who are listening, details alert.
You can skip ahead if
you
like.
I could just stop. Throwing up. Sorry. And you understood everything. So I was just going on. So Phoebe, who was the owner of the house, where actually Ali and I were roommate at that time, you know, I could not move, not even understand, like not even call the, another difficult thing, like phone calls are very hard, especially mm-hmm. on these topics, because at least where you're in person, you can read the lips. While when you are on the phone, you know, if you don't know the word, there's no chance you're understanding. You know, they can speak slower. You have to ask, please say it in different words. Think that you're talking to a 2 years old baby. Well, so that was a little problematic for me because I was very sick and I could not call the insurance to know, you know, which IR, if they could, you know. So that was mm-hmm. that was the circumstance. And so, of course, when you call to talk about these private things, you know, you have to be the person. You can't have somebody talking from you, you know. So I guess we had this kind of weird conversation with the person of the insurance where I said, yes, I'm here, but I don't understand anything. So she's talking to me and she translating. She, you know, so we had this very weird call with insurance. And then, yes, then she took me to the hospital. But again, you know, I think they give me some very strong anti-spasm, I guess. Mm. So those, you know, they knock you out. So the person, you know, was telling me what they were doing to me, you know, this is an injection of this, you're doing this. I didn't understand anything, really, no word. So when Phoebe came to pick me up, because I could not even call an Uber by myself, she was like, well, what did they say? I was like, I don't know. Please ask, because I don't know. I have no idea what happened to me. Please help. So yeah, so this to say the some very specific context, you know, my cards might be still very problematic. I guess all that everything for now for me is like everything has to do with retirement plans.
But you're not old enough to retire, yeah. So no one get that idea.
Thank you. But you need to think of in advance.
Yes, but sure. Very far in advance. 50 years in advance in her case.
Oh, yeah. And the doctors in bank. Mm-hmm. So the first time that I went alone by myself to a bank to talk about my account and everything, and I actually went through the conversation, I was really happy to the point that I called my parents and was like, hey, I managed a bank situation.
Good job.
Yeah. But, you know, there are ways to. The thing is, when you don't expect the language, that's complicated, or the vocab. You can go, like, I don't do it anymore, but in the very beginning, I would write down, you know, and this is also mm-hmm. a suggestion that I give to my students. Like, when you're in a situation, prepare beforehand, you know, write down what you're gonna say. So I will literally write, hi, my name is, I want this, you know, a piece of paper. And then, you know, if I had to call, I will follow my script.
Yeah, I want to hop in because I've heard lots of different people with stories like this. I actually met someone at the bank who was working at the bank who told me about her first banking experience.
Well, I have to say, I had the same problem in Italian. I mean, that's not necessarily a language. When I go to the bank, I say, ha-ha. I was like, ha-ha. This is your plan and blah, 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 ha-ha.
Sure. But, like, it was really similar. And it was like she told me that, you know, she wrote down what she wanted to say and what she needed. And it was really the point of that conversation was that there are sometimes when people break from normal expectations with mm-hmm. these interactions, depending on these other things that they show up with, what they look like, it's often like, how are they perceived in terms of like economic status, gender? They become suspicious, right? And I remember this bank person telling me this story and how like her taking a job at the bank actually makes people who come in who have certain like barriers that are that mm-hmm. they experience more comfortable because she gets it. She doesn't say it's weird that you have to write your information on a piece of paper. It's okay to deviate from this normal expected. You walk in the door, you walk up to the counter, you tell them what you want. Everyone gets and understands all these things, but that's not always the case.
Absolutely.
So it was really cool. I don't remember her name or anything at this point, but it was a big deal for these, like you're describing, these can be really anxiety inducing contexts. And for there to be a person who's there to like meet you where you are so that you can still transact, it's a big deal.
Yeah, because you're really talking about, you know, money, you're talking about health, you know, you're foreign in a country, you're worried that, you know, you sign something that you don't fully understand, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. So I guess also, like, you know, some very often people that study language, like undergrad students, they ask, you know, what I'm going to do with this language, learning this language, I don't know, what is... but you're really touching an important point, especially for people working at front desk, for instance, like knowing a language, another language, or also being from another country. It's very important for this kind of reasons, you know, because you need to be able to communicate and serve like a bigger, like you need to know what's your community, how your community is made of, you know, and this is an ideal perfect democratic situation.
Sure.
But, you know, of course, you know, knowing your society, your community, you know, like if you're a company, if you're any sort of anything that has to do with the public, you know, you may want to have, you know, people that can speak different languages or that they're foreign themselves. Helps.
This is a big deal. Like, this is something else that I really wanted to talk about when we think about what you're describing is language access. Mm-hmm. That's a really big deal. One example that comes to mind is the Flint water crisis and how most of the materials were in English, so that there are people who weren't understanding, they weren't getting the warnings about the water not being safe because most of the materials, if not all the materials, were only in English, right? But not everyone in that community speaks English, right? there was a portion of the community not receiving important information about their health because people who served the public didn't account for the different languages of the people who lived there, right? And that's a really big deal. So often when these conversations come up, I'm like, Flint. I think about Flint. So there's a local law, immigration law office who we had a chance to sit and chat with actually for the show. But they talked about how some of their clients just want to touch base because they need a little bit of help. I have a doctor's appointment. I have to go to the hospital. I have to go to the city hall or something. How do I do that? Mm-hmm. Right. You know, little things can trip you up if you go to the wrong desk and they don't know what you need. You don't know how to describe what you need. You could be late for an appointment that you can't be late for. And then there are consequences. Right. And so there are implications when, again, people who are public facing mm-hmm. don't account for the different people that they might interact with and interface mm-hmm. with. It's of massive importance. And so anyway, your stories are often super, super funny, but they're like, they highlight these other realities that people face often and every day.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then like with what you're saying also, I mean, we can't forget that we're also touching different level of privileges mm-hmm. because in any case, there are different level of foreign people. There are different level of immigrations. There are different level of languages. There are languages that are more accessible and others that are less. But also, and for me, it's still a question of democracy. I feel like, I don't know if democracy is the best government or best way of organizing society. But for me, democracy is like thinking that, you know, everyone has the same rights. But also, you know, taking care of minorities and taking care of the fact that, you know, if you are in the same space, in the same community, same social space, there are people that might be more or less privileged. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the resources that you need for people might be different, you know, and so you might need to consider to invest in minorities and people that are, you know, they have more complicated situations that might include language. You know, if they are part of that community, mm-hmm. doesn't matter how long they've been in their community, they are, you know. And so if this has to be with language things, well, you know, it's important to invest to make those minorities, you know, the same level of the privileged people, you know.
Yeah, so it's interesting that you bring up this sort of context, because I hear a lot about assimilation and, you know, it's like when you said, doesn't mm-hmm. matter how long they've been here for, as an example, I personally really agree with that. When I hear the word assimilate, I really think about this process of taking pieces off of yourself in order to be more palatable to whoever is the mainstream power at the moment. Right. And that changes as well. So, when I hear people say, we don't need to develop an extra whatever, whatever, the person mm-hmm. needs to change themselves to fit. When you talk about most things, that's difficult. But with language in particular, because of how closely I think associated to one's identity it is, mm-hmm. you're literally saying, take off part of your own brain and in order to like fit in here, right? And but there's no guarantee that you would be accepted anyway, right? Because like, let's say you speak an accent in English. You learn the language. They said that's what you need to do. Learn English. Mm-hmm. Speak English. Well, I did that. But you have an accent. So there's still a layer of discrimination you're going to experience because you don't speak English enough like, quote unquote, them, right? Yeah. So there are these, you know, goalposts that get moved mm-hmm. when you're saying this, in order to belong, you need to be this model.
Yeah.
And anyone who deviates from that is unacceptable or something of that sort, right? And so it's really, I think, dangerous to hear when those words are spoken in a sentence, you know, speak like us or learn English. When you have those people who are of that mindset, I think it's helpful to hear stories like yours to think critically about their own understanding of what it means to belong in a place.
Yeah, absolutely. So, it's interesting how this conversation very easily becomes super political in the sense that, You know, but again, it's connected to the idea that you are what you speak, you know. So why people will get so have so strong feelings. So yes, absolutely. You're totally right. There are two completely, well, there may be more, but there are mainly two completely different opposite way of dealing with the situation. You know, that's one is like, okay, you have to do the effort to be like us. And the other one is like, well, let's not think about us. Let's think that it's just us, you know, in the sense like let's not even divide in us and them. So let's just make the system work, you know, and see what we need to do. So I guess it's again an opposite way of thinking about, you know, the place where you live, the world, the borders. Again, it's a completely different way of understanding how, you know, relations in the world are, you know. So for me, I'm in from the other point of view, in the sense that if I could, I will like erase all barriers, all borders, in the sense that it's a fiction. Every borders are fictions, you know, and for me, it makes totally sense that we are free to cross, you know. But of course, again, this is not an individual level. We are talking about then politics, economy, resources. So what you were saying is precisely a matter of managing resources. So how much, what are our resources, like meaning money? So how are we going to invest this? Mm-hmm. Is this going to give us profit or not? Well, in the long run, yes, because helping a person not only integrate it, but being, again, it's not a good word, being accepted, but it means like being part of, you know, of a situation, let's say, in the long run will definitely make that situation better.
Yeah.
While in the short run, yes, the person will learn English super fast, but at what price, as you said? What price?
What's the cost?
Yeah, what's the cost? They're losing not only what belongs to them, they will be ill citizens, in a sense, because they will face things like depressions, sadness, you know, they will feel retaliation, they will leave, you know, their relationship with that place with fears and, you know, bad feelings, which, again, this is not, you know, exaggerating. Like, depression is a very much, I think it's a feeling that's very much, well, I don't know how to say that, but let's say feeling, very much tied to the experience of being in a foreign world,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that it gets back to what we said before, you know, what's your home? I don't know where to belong to, etc. But again, but if you feel like you're in a place where you have constantly to abandon yourself and become something else without being your choice, of course, you know, this cannot but develop bad feelings, you know. So, I don't know. I'm much more a philosopher of the long run. So I feel like everything needs time. You know, you can have things, results in the short run, but, you know, then they are not long-lasting results.
Yes, they're not durable. So yeah. This has been a really super cool conversation. I feel like we need to do this again because there's so many more things that I actually wanted to talk about. To wrap us up for today, is there anything that you want to share, anything to, like, take us out? I really enjoyed having this conversation. It's always fun talking about
language stuff with you.
We talk about language a lot, I think.
I know.
So,
because we are what we speak.
Yeah.
Well, one thing.
Yes.
I'm going to tell just two people. Record yourself and record the people you love, the kids, older people. Anyone, this, I think it's a good thing. I have one regret.
Mm.
Not many in my life, I'm glad. But one, yes, not recording, for instance, my grandparents, especially their stories. And so I feel like podcasting is very important. Start as early as 1 month. When they scream, record them. Record your newborns. So then when they're 18, you can play them back and say, hey, do you know, you see what I endured when you were that young? You have to thank me. Okay, yes. Yeah, I feel like this is my recommendation for today.
Thank you. Yeah. Preserve your history and
your voice.
Yes, preserve your history, preserve your voice, build a brighter future.
Well, yes, metaphorically, literally, like it doesn't have to be literal voice. It can be trace. It can be anything. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for being here.
Produced in partnership with Ann Arbor District Library and recorded at Fifth Avenue Studios.